Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We are here today continuing with our look at Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and we're happy to have Ms. Heather Harlan, Director of Communications and Development for Maryvale Preparatory School. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean, for having me.
So give us an overview of Maryvale and all that it has to offer.
Sure. Maryvale is an all-girls independent Catholic school serving students in grades 6 through 12. We are located on a gorgeous 88-acre campus in Greenspring Valley, right in the heart of Baltimore County, right off of Falls Road. And we really cater to all different kinds of learners. I think what makes us unique is that we are a manageable size and can give each girl the individual attention that she needs.
Mm. Yeah, I think for a parent, that's the one thing, your biggest fear is that someone's going to fall through the cracks.
The girls may not like to hear this, but we know every single one of them.
And that's a great thing. So one of my favorite aspects of Maryvale is the Leadership Institute, which I just think is a tremendous idea, and I can't believe more schools don't do it. Can you just kind of give us all that there is to know about the Leadership Institute?
Absolutely. We are so excited about this signature program, which started last fall, so we're in our second year. And we have a little bit for everyone. We start with the middle schoolers, where we offer a curriculum-based, tailored class for each middle school girl. We also offer in the ninth grade a leadership prep class, which is new this year. And for our 11th and 12th graders, we offer an amazing leadership elective, which includes a lot of real-world experiences. We have different people come into the classroom to talk to them about careers and leading different aspects of the business world and the nonprofit world. This past year, our Leadership Institute director, Mary Ellen Rector Feist, took the girls to McCormick and Under Armour. So again, they're getting that hands-on experience. And we also are doing a speaker series as well, which kicked off last year, assemblies, and it just keeps building every year.
And at its core, the Leadership Institute, you know, as the title would suggest, teaches girls how to be leaders. And so we're talking about skills as basic as eye contact and handshakes, as well as like how to write a letter and
absolutely
address people.
My favorite part of the course is when they have to make a phone call, Sean. And this may seem...
No texting?
No texting. They actually have to make a phone call and leave a message. And this may sound strange, but
This
is not natural to these kids. So it's even things like that. Resume writing, you name it.
That's great. Tell me about some of the other programs there.
Sure. We have a lot of additional academic offerings, particularly in the upper school this year. We have four different levels of learning in the upper school, starting with college preparatory, accelerated, honors, and at the top, AP. We have added a lot of new AP offerings. We are up to about 15, and some of those new ones include AP Economics and AP Calculus BC. So we, again, want to make sure we are catering to all the different kinds of learners. Also, what might be interesting for people to know is that for those who may not find their interest in our curriculum, we are able to arrange it sometimes at the higher end with colleges. We have a partnership with Anne Arundel Community College and Towson University to provide online classes for our students who may be interested in something like programming logic, something completely out of the box.
Wow. And one of the aspects that I think is a really smart approach, given that Maryvale is all about preparing students for college, is that it begins its college counseling program not in 10th or 11th grade, but at 9th grade.
Absolutely. I just sat down with our college counseling director yesterday to have her walk me through this process. And in the 9th grade, she explores careers with every single 9th grader. And by 10th grade, she is sitting down with every single sophomore and her parents to walk them through what will be ahead and review the testing policy. And by 11th grade, she's helping them with resume writing and visiting. it's an unbelievable support system for the students and the parents.
Maryvale is sponsored by the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur. How are the sisters, the charism of the sisters, present in the daily life of the school?
In every aspect of the school, Sean. Actually, I just left an all faculty and staff prayer retreat this morning where we are discussing this very mission and the hallmarks. And our theme for this year is building a community of respect and dignity and inclusivity. And that is certainly rooted in the hallmarks of the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur. We're proud to tell you that we're celebrating our 70th anniversary this year.
Wow.
From when the sisters founded the school. And we will be doing that in many ways. Campus ministry and theology is alive and well.
That's great. And switching gears, I know the school is heavily focused on integrating technology as part of its preparation for students for the next step in their career and in their education. Talk to me a little bit about the way that the school is integrating technology in the classroom.
Sure. Well, Maryvale was one of the first one-to-one iPad schools in the region. It does hold the distinction as being the first all-girls one-to-one iPad school in the region. And as a result, many other schools have come in to study how we do this so that they can launch their own programs. NASA's been in as well to partner with us. And we are constantly looking of ways to innovate technology across the curriculum. We have a new technology coordinator that we're very excited about, and an upper school head who is very interested in all aspects of technology. So that will just continue.
I know that the school has a new fine arts facility, which must complement its outstanding fine arts program. So talk to us about that.
Sure. We are very blessed to have the Aaron McCarthy Humanities Hall at the center of our campus. And that has allowed us, in particular, to expand our theater program. The Humanities Hall includes a 500-seat theater, which would rival those in any college or university. Within that, we have been able to incorporate a theater tech program, which is incredible and very popular, which introduces girls to all aspects of the theater, from behind the scenes to lighting to sound to makeup, you name it. We also have an incredible visual arts program as well, which allows a lot of independent study in the older years in the 11th and 12th grade.
And you mentioned when we started that you're blessed to have an 88-acre campus, which I have to say is the largest that, in my recollection. How does the school make use of the facilities and the space there? That has to be a wonderful complement to the school in terms of its approach to teaching. And
it certainly is. We certainly are able to use that campus not only for traditional things like athletics, but our science teachers, just to give you an example, will go down towards Green Spring Valley and take the middle school girls in particular for hands-on learning exercises outside lessons. It's just incredible in the sciences in particular.
It's a living classroom of itself, right?
It is.
And it's a beautiful campus if you drive through. Whether you're coming down Falls Road or you're coming down Green Spring Valley, I mean, it's just a gorgeous setting.
We feel very blessed, and we feel it's great for the girls because we do offer that college-like feel, which helps them gain a sense of independence and confidence as they're moving from class to class.
Sure. You mentioned earlier the addition of the AP classes. Tell me about the school's efforts to add rigor to the top end of its academic programs.
Sure. Like I mentioned earlier, our goal is to cater to all different kinds of learners, and what we realized was that we have a lot of extremely talented students at that top end, and we really felt that we needed to add additional AP classes to accommodate them. So again, economics is new this year, calculus BC. Half of our APs are dedicated to STEM, which is attracting a lot of attention. And again, on the higher end, those college partnerships, which we continue to forge and strengthen, help that added rigor.
You want to go back and revisit the online classes and your partnerships with Towson and with Anne Arundel Community. Are there opportunities to earn credits ahead of time as part of that?
There absolutely are. And we had one student who 2 years ago, she took the programming logic class, online class through Towson University, and her interests were both in arts and technology. And she's gone on to Rochester Institute of Technology and is now studying gaming. And yes, that definitely helped her with college credit.
Absolutely. That's a really, really great benefit. I'm sure you have an open house date set, and I'm sure that you have a website to tell me about. What's the best way for people to learn more about Maryvale Preparatory School?
Sure, maryvale.com, and our open house is October 25th. We are looking forward to welcoming many, many girls on campus and showing them the Maryvale magic.
Heather Harlan from Maryvale Preparatory School in the Towson and Green Spring Valley area. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The Archdiocese said farewell last week to one of its most beloved priests, Monsignor Arthur F. Valenzano, the 24th rector of the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Baltimore, died September 5th after a lengthy battle with leukemia. Archbishop William E. Lurie offered a funeral mass September 10th at the Basilica, where people from across the Archdiocese came to celebrate the life of a man the Archbishop described as a priest of tremendous pastoral love. He lived the priesthood in such a faithful and loving way, and he had such a winning personality that he was respected by everyone, the Archbishop told the Catholic Review. Every place he went, he had a way of lovingly sharing the faith and winning people's confidence and friendship. Through that confidence and friendship, he helped them know the Lord. Monsignor Valenzano was a former pastor of St. John in Westminster and St. William of York in Baltimore. He was also a former administrator at the Monsignor O'Dwyer Youth Retreat House in Sparks and an associate pastor of St. Ambrose in Park Heights and St. Mary of the Assumption in Govins. For full coverage of the life of Monsignor Valenzano, visit CatholicReview.org. When Pope Francis approaches the Catholic Charities Building in downtown Washington during his U.S. visit in September, he will encounter a work of art that depicts Jesus as a homeless person on a park bench. Roland Woody, a Washington resident who was homeless until earlier this year, said he hopes the Pope blesses the statue. "It's kind of a symbol of hope for the homeless in D.C.," he said. "If the Pope blesses it, it will be even more special." Pope Francis blessed a similar version of the homeless Jesus sculpture during a 2013 general audience at the Vatican. Afterward, the Pope told the sculptor that he thought it was a beautiful piece of art and a wonderful representation of Jesus. Learn more at CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at catholicreview.org. Again, online, that's catholicreview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We continue today with our discussion with Father Michael Roach of the Archbishops of Baltimore. And today we have the privilege of chatting about Francis Patrick Keough, who served as Archbishop of Baltimore from 1947 to 1961. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
So Archbishop Keough comes to us from Providence, where he'd served as bishop prior to joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore. What do we know about his early life and his early ministry?
Right. He was from Connecticut, actually, and named Bishop of Providence, Rhode Island. His great accomplishment in Providence was calming down the terrible rivalry between the French and the Irish components of his diocese. It had gotten so bad that some of the French independents had been excommunicated. He brought great peace to that, had respect for both communities, the Irish and the French, and as a matter of fact, wound up sending a lot of his seminaries to France to study, to prepare them to deal equally with the French and the Irish populations in that state. It was a very dreadful time before he got there. He settled things down.
So he is a moderator, a mediator.
Indeed, a peacemaker.
A peacemaker. Yes. What else do we know about him as a person?
Well, he also had a great heart for the young. He loved kids, and he put great stress on education. And the great pictures of Archbishop Keough are him surrounded by kids, and they're all smiling delightedly with him. And he was like a grandfather.
He did have kind of a grandfatherly countenance.
Absolutely,
about him.
Absolutely, he did.
So what do you think leads Rome or whomever decides that this man is going to be the next Archbishop of Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm told that part of the motivation was that he had been so strong in education and had actually been the chairman of the education committee of the bishops. And they knew that Baltimore, in the boom after the Second World War, needed many more schools. Mm.
So, in fact, the archdiocese itself grows by 52% during his time as archbishop, much of it in the suburbs. This is the time where we begin to see the exodus from the city. How did he help guide the diocese during this kind of time of growth and expansion?
Well, unfortunately, his health betrayed him, and he gets sick and spends the last few years of his life out at Stella Maris, the facility that he had built for the aged and infirm. In his early days, he had vigorous programs, but the last few years were a bit fading for him. So he didn't get to do everything he had wanted to do. He did, of course, build the charity institutions out in Delaney Valley, bought the estate at Long Crandon, mm-hmm. and began with an orphanage, a home for single mothers, and an infant home. He consolidated, did a lot of great work in Catholic charity. Baltimore had been so parish-centered. There were at one time, I think, 21 different orphanages, many of which were centered in parishes. And he saw this was very inefficient, so he reorganized Catholic charities and brought all the orphanages together out in Delaney Valley there.
Seems to speak to his administrative abilities and the fact that the church is buying up properties. He is said to have led the first real large-scale capital campaign, fundraising campaign. So this is a man with some vision and some gravitas, I would imagine.
Yes. Someone told me that well into the 70s, we were still utilizing the lands that he had bought with a lot of foresight all over the diocese.
That's amazing. So the landscape of the Archdiocese seems to change a great deal during this time as Archbishop, from one that was Baltimore-centric to a more suburban one, as we referenced. So how did this shape his priorities? Are we seeing suburban schools, suburban parishes, just more of a suburban feel to what had been really an urban and a rural-centric diocese?
Right. There was great suburbanization in that time. You can see the growth of what were tiny country parishes to among the biggest parishes of the diocese. I think of the ones in Catonsville and Towson and the like that just boomed at that time. And he encouraged the pastors to build and build and build. And you see a colossal amount of facilities put up at that time.
So whereas his predecessor, Archbishop Curley, eschewed the opportunity to build a new cathedral, as it were, one does come about during the time of Francis Keogh.
Interesting. There's some urban legends about that. I'm not sure how true they are. One of which was if they weren't going to use that money soon, they were going to lose that money from the O'Neill estate, and he had to use at least 51% of that legacy for a new cathedral. There were those who said, why do we need a new cathedral? But we had the money. If we were going to get the rest of the $20 million, we were going to have to build this cathedral. And so he took the steps to do it. Grand piece of land. A Boston architect, interestingly enough, certainly an interesting building, very controversial because it was so modern when it was opened, and 20 years later it was considered very archaic because of the changes in the church in that era.
In the style, and it was certainly far different from what had been the only cathedral in town, which was the Basilica of the Assumption.
Right. Some people have said that the new cathedral is the last breath of the Art Deco. Interestingly,
when do you think we'll stop calling it the new cathedral? I know that in my own childhood, that's all it was called, and I'm hearing it, but not quite as much.
I'm a standard bearer for the old cathedral and the new cathedral. Believe me,
distinguish it.
Yeah, I still call the airport Friendship, so you know.
So don't use you as a guide.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So, what was the relationship like between Archbishop Keogh and his priests? Anything we know about that?
Well, as he faded. When he talked to the priest, as he would have done in Providence, he always called you père in French. Well, père, I think this. He was a gentleman, though. He really was a gentleman. And
he was not a priest of Baltimore, and nor did he go to the seminary here. Was that an obstacle at all, do you think, being a complete kind of foreigner, if you will, to the archdiocese?
Well, remember, only two of our archbishops were Baltimoreans in all of these years, and I think only two or three more were Marylanders, so we were rather accustomed to having bishops from different parts of the world. This one was particularly northern, though, coming from all the way from New England.
You mentioned that he was a gentleman, and I think it speaks to stories that his former assistant, Monsignor Bozell, told about how affable he was, and it would often take him 30 minutes just to get inside his residence because he would stop and talk to everybody he met. Right. He also mentions that he, kind of an ironic quirk about him was that he was scared to death to ride in the back seat of a car, which I think is
that's amazing.
Kind of an interesting.
And Bobby Bozell was a great storyteller. He was always one of my great sources for oral history, and a great priest, and he loved Archbishop Keogh.
Yeah. Well, and anyone who works close to an archbishop, if they develop that kind of a friendship and affinity for him, I think that's a pretty good indicator of the kind of man he must
be. Absolutely tells the tale.
Yeah. So what's the final word on Francis Patrick Keogh?
He did the best he could given his bad health, and we owe an awful lot to him in terms of building and Catholic charities in the Archdiocese.
So a visionary and a skilled administrator.
Right.
That's Father Michael Roach speaking about Archbishop Francis Keogh.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics. Even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point,
or you can only see him on a video screen, you will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150, 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
The Catholic Church in Baltimore warmly welcomes His Holiness Pope Francis to the United States of America. In support of the Pope's historic visit, the Archdiocese of Baltimore is hosting a viewing of the Pope's September 27th Mass in Philadelphia. Join us as we watch the Papal Mass in the grass of the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in North Baltimore, located at 5200 North Charles Street in Homeland. The cathedral lawn will be open to those wishing to watch the Mass on a large outdoor screen. The Ravens-Bengals game will be shown at 1 p.m., and the Papal Mass begins at 4. All are welcome to bring chairs, blankets, and a picnic dinner. Food trucks have also been invited. For more information, visit www.archbalt.org. Come join us as we watch the Papal Mass in the grass. For more information, visit www.archbalt.org.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.